Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Jake Litarski, joined today by John Littering. If you're out there on Twitter, you can give John a follow at John Littering. That's J-O-N-L-I-T-T-E-R-I-N-E. You can follow me, of course, at JakeSki52. Today, John and I are going to be making our picks for quite possibly the biggest fight of 2017. It's UFC 217 in the promotion's second ever trip to the historic Madison Square Garden. John, thanks for joining me today. And one big thing about this card here is the return of George St. Pierre. John, you've been a UFC fan for a long time, as well as myself here. He started with the promotion all the way back in 2004. For those fans that are newer, that came on in the Ronda Rousey, Conor McGregor era, those newer fans, what's one thing they need to know about GSP? And I guess part two is if you have any kind of favorite memory or moment of GSP.
You know, it's kind of crazy. I guess perhaps the best known memory of GSP's entire career is a negative one. And that's, his stunning knockout loss to Matt Serra, which is maybe the biggest upset in the history of the company. Mm-hmm. But
right up there with Holm Rousey. Yeah,
right up there. Casual fan, GSP is, he's been one of the best fighters in the world for, over a decade. And he does a lot of things well. You know, his strength is, I would say, his cardio and his wrestling are probably his biggest strengths. He's 36 now, but he's a freak athlete. He keeps himself in great shape, and he, in a card that has three title fights and is pretty much stacked up and down from beginning to end, there's no doubt that the return of St. Pierre is definitely the biggest drawing, the drawing card on the whole thing.
Before we get into breaking down the specific matchup here with Michael Bisping, can we talk about George St. Pierre and where he stands potentially in greatest of all time conversation? Is he in that conversation for you? Where does he stack up?
He's definitely up there. He would be higher, certainly, if he didn't take all the time off that he did.
His last fight was November 2013 when he beat Johnny Hendricks in split controversial decision, right?
Yeah, you know, you're looking at, you know, just about 4 years, and, you know, had he been, you know, competing that whole entire time and having success, he would obviously be higher up the list than he is. But he has a chance Saturday to become just the fourth fighter in UFC history to win a belt in multiple weight classes. So he's been given an opportunity here, and he's a big draw. And as we say all the time, the UFC's main goal is to make money, and putting GSP in the main event of a second card in Madison Square Garden helps do that.
Yeah, absolutely. GSP, maybe not the same name recognition after the long layoff, but I mean, I can see the UFC starting to really heavily promote this, you know, throughout all their marketing throughout the course of the week. So they're trying to get that name recognition back here. GSP has never lost a fight that he has failed to later avenge. You mentioned the upset loss to Matt Serra. He avenged that. One of his early fights back at UFC 50, that's how long far back we're talking here, lost to Matt Hughes, of course, came back and avenged that loss at UFC 79, 3 years later. So a little bit of MMA history for you guys. But looking ahead here, we need to start breaking down this matchup from a fantasy standpoint, because everything about the Vegas odds and the DraftKings salaries here make these fighters seem relatively identical. Both are priced at 8,100 on DraftKings. Both are, it's basically a wash, you know, if you count what the house takes, it's a pick'em fight in terms of Vegas odds. And, you know, falling in line with that theme of coin tosses, we have the odds to finish being plus 105. So just about as good of a chance as a decision as a stoppage here. Michael Bisping, of course, coming off injury. GSP coming off a long layoff here. How do you see this one breaking down?
Well, like you just said, the great unknown here is what GSP and how he looked after all his time away. Now, I'm sure over the 4 years he's been gone, I know he's been offered, you know, other fights than this earlier. You know, he said no for whatever reasons. He's now decided to come back. But if you would have told me when GSP left 4 years ago that, A, he wouldn't fight for 4 years, and B, when he came back, that he'd be in a title fight against Michael Bisping and the odds would be and the salaries would be even, I would say you're crazy. And that's not a knock on Michael Bisping. That's just you know, the dominant fighter and just the overall name recognition that St. Pierre has had over the years. Now, I am surprised that everything is so close, and everything is so close simply because the only reason I can think of that makes any sense whatsoever is the unknown of how GSP looks, you know, with all the time away. And the thing about Bisping, he obviously stunned Luke Rockhold, you know, last June 2016, won the middleweight championship. It was a fight that Rockhold said essentially that he took Bisping lightly and overlooked him.
And he maybe have had like some MCL damage in that. You can't say that for sure, but you know, he'll say that at least.
Yeah, you know, and Bisping essentially, you know, landed one big punch that led to, you know, a flurry that finished the fight. Bisping defended his title last October against Dan Henderson, won the fight, went all five rounds, wasn't pretty, almost got knocked down on multiple occasions.
Mm-hmm. Hendo did get some H-bombs in that, and we're talking, what's Hendo, 42, something like that?
You know, Bisping at age 38, you know, and he always has, he's a brawler, you know, he always has been. That's his MO. He likes to stand, he likes to pound, you know, he keeps himself in terrific shape. So a five-round fight is not going to be any issue for him. He'll be ready to go. But GSP over the course of his UFC career, and you know, he's been away for a while, obviously, but he's had plenty of fights with the company. GSP has averaged over 4 takedowns a fight, and Michael Bisping's career takedown defense is a shade under 65%, which is not good. You want to be, you know, if you're an elite fighter, you know, the top guys are, you know, you're looking at a minimum, you know, 70, high 70s, low 80s, something like that. Mm-hmm. GSP, we were talking before, you know, what do newer fans, you know, what do they need to know about GSP? One of the things they need to know is that his fights are not always visually pleasing. You know, they're not always stand up, you know, fight of the night type brawls. You know, they can be grinding and they can be slow at times and they can involve St. Pierre, you know, in top position and those kind of things. So it's not always the fast paced fight that a casual fan is looking for. But this is basically, as far as I'm concerned, it boils down to, if you think GSP is coming back in shape, and I do, because that's just his personality. It's always been his personality. He wasn't sitting on the cast for 4 years. He's ready to go. I am shocked that everything is so even. I don't want to say 100% convinced, but I'm very, very confident he's going to win this fight. And Bisping is going to do what he does. He's going to make it ugly. He's going to try, he's going to turn it into a brawl. And that is his best chance of winning. Now, does GSP play into that? You know, we've seen fighters lose fights because they decide they want to knock someone out and not play to their strengths. And next thing you know, they're unconscious. So, does he go to the wrestling and, try and drag him out and, win a belt and, have a successful return and, might not be the prettiest thing to watch, but he still wins? Or does he engage Bisping in a brawl? And that and GSP's time away is the great unknown. But, he's my pick, and I didn't hesitate for a tenth of a second when I made it.
Okay. All right. Well, so a couple things I want to note about GSP. One, you mentioned the key, and I think that's what you're going to hear from most areas leading into this fight. The key is whether or not he can get the takedown consistently. GSP is somebody who has averaged 4.2 takedowns per 15 minutes in his UFC career, according to Fight Metric, and that to me is really going to be key to the fight. Now, GSP, his championship run, and all of his, most of his, pretty much all of his wins here have come in the welterweight division. That's 170 pounds. Now these guys are going to fight at middleweight, 185 pounds. But the size difference, Bisping's going to be 2 inches taller, but GSP actually has a 1 inch reach advantage. So physically these two match up, pretty similar here. Is that going to be a factor at all?
It could be, but again, this is, if you were telling me GSP was coming back from all the time away and he was fighting for a middleweight title and he was fighting, a Chris Weidman or a Luke Rockhold or Robert Whittaker or, somebody like that, I'm not so sure I would pick him. But Bisping is, and this sounds terrible because it sounds like I'm putting him down, and I'm not, because, he's been a good fighter for a long time, but he essentially, I don't say he got lucky, but the way the Rockhold fight ended was kind of fluky. Not that he won, but just how it happened. And then he fought someone in Dan Henderson who, nobody that, that was a money making, fight. That was not, Dan Henderson was not the number one contender for the middleweight title. If you go on, who deserved it at the time. So, not all that long ago, Michael Bisping, while viewed as a solid fighter, certainly wasn't viewed as a fighter who anybody thought anytime soon would be a dominant champion. And now he is the champion, but he's going to have a slight size advantage, but I don't think it's going to make up for the talent advantage that GSP has. And as long as he wasn't sitting on the couch and as long as he's committed, and I have no reason, Nick Diaz come back tomorrow, I'm going to tell you they're out there because they're getting a huge paycheck. I'm sure GSP is getting a huge paycheck, but I also think he's ready to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, that's very, very interesting, John. And I maybe it's because I got my heavily involvement later in the game, but I'm actually going to pick Bisping in this fight. The 4 years out of live octagon action, I feel like that is going to take some time to adjust. Now, if he gets through the first and second rounds and looks okay, I think he might be able to, he'll be well suited for the way out. He needs to take a couple shots, to kind of wake up and remember that he is in a fight here. But I just think Bisping, I know he's dealt with a knee injury, and that's a little bit of a concern for any fighter that is coming off an injury and maybe hasn't been as active. But everything I've seen about his camp, Bisping's brought in some of the craziest, best wrestlers from college wrestlers, young, driven, talented people to really work that part of his game and work on his takedown defense. The slight size advantage is a factor for me. And even though, the last year, his last fight was Henderson, the competition hasn't been really great lately, I still take Bisping in this fight by a hair, but from a fantasy perspective, this is the kind of fight where I've got my lineup that I like a lot. I'm going to make, because they're the same salary, I'm going to make one lineup with Bisping and one lineup with GSP just to settle that out. But you're not even going down that road. You're going 100% GSP.
Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong and maybe I'm just, blinded by the years of greatness and not taking the time of winning to account as much as I should be, but I don't have much doubt about this one.
Yes. All right. So we'll split on this one. I guess we'll see how the standings rack up moving forward here. Let's see how we stack up on the rest of these fights, though. We've got an exceptional co-main event. It can be argued that this should be the main event of the night. It's the Bantamweight Championship between Cody Garbrandt and TJ Dillashaw. Garbrandt checks in as a slight favorite, -175 according to Vegas. Dillashaw +155. Garbrandt $400 more than Dillashaw on DraftKings. He checks in at 8,300, where Dillashaw is 7,900. The odds makers think this one will probably be a decision, or again, it's very, very close, plus 100 odds to finish here. This one is a red hot fighter in Cody Garbrandt, who just knocked off Dominick Cruz, who you and I both thought was one of the best, most technical bantamweights that we've ever seen. Coming up, again, you know, unlike Bisping, he's going to fight the number one contender in the bantamweight division, and it's pretty clear that it is TJ Dillashaw. What do you think about this one playing out?
This is an exceptional fight, you know, essentially as good a fight as, you know, the UFC can put together when you take into account, you know, the backstories and Dillashaw leaving Team Alpha Male and all that stuff. And two guys who, by all accounts, you know, legitimately just really don't like each other. And this was supposed to happen in July. It didn't happen because Garbrandt had a back injury. I want to say he actually flew to Germany to get treatment. It was a whole big thing. Mm-hmm. Apparently, he's good to go now. So two fighters who fight very similar styles. They have backgrounds in wrestling, but essentially their money is made due to the speed and the quickness on their hands. And I picked Garbrandt, and the reason is more or less what you said earlier. What he did to Dominick Cruz was something that nobody had ever seen before. Cruz was, I thought, at least the way Garbrandt defeated him, I didn't think was possible. He was twice as fast as Cruz was on the feet. Every time Cruz threw, Garbrandt got off first. It was a thing of beauty, and it was absolutely amazing to watch. And, you know, when Dillashaw fought Cruz, he ran into the same problem. Cruz was doing to Dillashaw what, you know, Garbrandt did to Cruz. And it's, you know, you might want to say that perhaps TJ has more one-punch knockout power, but I think Garbrandt can match him in terms of speed and combinations. But much like the unknown in the main event is GSP, how's GSP look after all the time away? The unknown here is Garbrandt, you know, fully over his back injury. And, you know, you want to say yes because, you know, you have a hard time believing, you know, he'd accept the fight, you know, the biggest fight of his career on such a big spot if he wasn't truly ready to go. But, you know, it's something to keep in the back of your mind.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and pick Garbrandt as well in this one. I do echo your slight level of concern about the back injury. You know, when I talk to the gamblers specifically, people who I know that bet a lot of money on fights, they always look to go against people that are coming off of injury. But after what Garbrandt did to Cruz, I don't know if I can pick against him for the foreseeable future. Now, one slight upside with Dillashaw is in his career, 5.38 significant strikes landed per minute. Garbrandt, 3.58. So that's a slight, you know, it's a 1.5 strikes per minute discrepancy there. That could help volume wise over a 5-round fight if you're talking about DraftKings points. But that only matters, I think, the strikes that Garbrandt gets are going to be more powerful than the ones that Dillashaw gets. So over a 5-round fight, I believe that it's going to be Garbrandt that causes more damage. John, this is one that we see eye to eye on, and I think are both going to go Garbrandt. And as our staff picks start coming in, which I'm going to compile on the site tomorrow, it's looking like Garbrandt's going to be dang near close to unanimous selection.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, that's not a knock on Dillashaw. That's just how good Garbrandt looked in the Cruz fight. And, you know, we're going to find out real quick whether that was just, you know, the night of his life in which he fought the perfect fight and got lucky, or, you know, if he's really a legit stud, because Dillashaw, like you said, is the guy who deserves the shot at the title, and he's going to get it on Saturday.
Yeah, he's absolutely number two. And then I just want to go back to Dana White comments relatively recently. He was asked who the next big superstar in the UFC will be, because we don't quite know about Conor McGregor's schedule yet. Ronda Rousey, I'd be surprised to see her fight in the octagon again. You know, I've heard rumors of strawweight, but I'm not buying that until I see something concrete. But Dana White thinks that Cody Garbrandt could be the UFC's next big superstar, and that's a lot of confidence to instill in a guy. So, you know, with that, that hopefully reassures me that he's healthy and that he'll be able to get it done. He is right next to Bisping in my A DraftKings lineup this week here. But let's check out this third title fight, John. It's a women's strawweight championship bout. Joanna Champion, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, going up against Rose Namajunas. The DraftKings salary, as is typical, Jędrzejczyk, quite the favorite, 9,200, Namajunas 7,000. Jędrzejczyk, I had written down minus 500, but I looked this morning and she's closer to minus 600. Now, we know, we've had this discussion on Jędrzejczyk before. She's active, she's talented, throws a high volume, best Muay Thai artist that I've seen in this division. So I guess the argument with this fight is, who I'm almost certain we're both picking Joanna, but the argument here is going to be, do you fade her at all on DraftKings? Because she is probably going to be the highest, you know, when you play a DraftKings lineup, you have ownership percentage right there. And I see her being one of the highest owned fighters on this card, no exception, just because she's been so dominant. And I basically, is there a path to victory for Namajunas here? Would you, if you made five lineups, would you put Rose in one of them?
Maybe one of them. And, you know, the path to victory for her is that she's such a good ground wrestler, and that's not, you know, Joanna's strength. But, mm-hmm. you know, Joanna has won the title and then successfully defended it five times. And I wrote in my preview article that, you know, she is, I don't know if she's right there, but she's very, very close for me as far as a fighter where we're at the point where I'm going to pick her a fighter until they lose. You know, Demetrius Johnson is one. You know, with all everything he's done, you know, he'll be my pick in no matter who he fights until he loses. Dominic Cruz was another until he lost to Cody Garbrandt. But Joanna, the most impressive thing about it is, like you said, we all know the Muay Thai game. We all know how great of a striker she is. But the most impressive thing about Joanna over the years is how she's improved in other areas and how she has beaten all kinds of fighters. You know, she beat Claudia Gadea twice, who's a very, very brutal, you know, physically strong wrestler. She destroyed Jessica Andrade in a fight that I picked Andrade. I don't know what I was thinking. And she made it look easy. You know, Andrade is maybe the, you know, pound for pound strongest fighter in the division. And Joanna just used that to her advantage and totally ate her up. Yeah. She fought Karolina Kolakiewicz, you know, a striker, at which point, you know, Joanna embarrassed her. You know, same thing. You know, no matter what the opponent brings to the table, you know, Joanna just counters it. And you know what Rose is going to do. You know, she's going to grab her. You know, she's going to try and get her to the mat. But Joanna is wiry strong. She doesn't look like she's going to, you know, be this big physical fighter. And next thing you know, you're not able to get her to the mat. So, look, Namajunas is a good fighter. 7,000 is a cheap price, you know, for someone who, you know, is a legitimate talent, but
it opens you up to a lot of favorites if you put a $7,000 fighter in there.
But there's nothing, you know, like we said, upsets happen all the time. You know, nobody thought Michael Bisping was going to beat Luke Rockhold. You know, these things happen, but Joanna is training full time in American Top Team now, which, you know, is only going to make her better with all the women down there. So, you know, there's nothing in the background of either of these women, at least that I see, that leads you to believe that Namajunas is going to win. But again, upsets happen. That's why they, you know, that's why the fights happen. And for a cheap salary, you set five lineups, you know, maybe you throw Rose in one of them. The concern is, you know, even if she wins, and from the other point of view, from Joanna's point of view, is I expect Rose to get hit a lot, even if she, you know, even if she somehow throws Joanna to the mat and rips her arm off, you know, I think she's going to get busted up doing it. So, you know, it makes, there's a risk reward thing here, but, you know, Joanna is just about, you know, she's probably top 5 pound for pound in the sport at this point with everything she's done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Joanna, I think, you know, needs to be, she's the first name that I click when I put together a DraftKings lineup. And in her last, what is it, five fights, she scored over 100 DraftKings points, 143 against Jessica Andrade. And I'm glad you brought up Andrade, because Andrade is a monster. She just completely dismantled Claudia Gadelha in their final fight. And Claudia Gadelha is someone that has maybe challenged Joanna more than most.
Yeah, been the only one who's really given her, you know, a close competitive fight on both occasions.
Yeah, and I mean, Andrade overwhelmed Gadelha with volume, but you, looking back at their last fight, you know, Joanna landed 225 significant strikes on Andrade, which is insane. Yeah. It's insane. And I think if it were Andrade against Nama Yunus in a matchup, I would absolutely pick Andrade. And that, you know, by transitive property or whatever you want to call it, that means that, you know, the pick here has got to be in Jacek. The cheap price makes it a little bit intriguing. You know, you have to take risks if you're going to get the big wins. But I think we're pretty going to be unanimous at RotoWire and MMA and picking Ioana to win straight up. And at 9,200, I mean, if she's essentially locked for 100 fantasy points, and that's good enough for a lock in my lineup, especially in cash games. Have to use her in cash games and head-to-head, otherwise you're missing out.
Yeah, she does things, even her weaknesses, she corrects and she is constantly improved at, which is what you have to do in this sport. And, you know, she started as a striker and that's still the area that she excels at the most, but she has improved in every area of the sport. She's getting top training in South Florida every single day. And, you know, she can get better, which considering all the success she has had, is a really scary thought.
Mm-hmm. I think eventually once she gets the title defense record she's looking for, we might see her at flyweight at 125, try to challenge herself a little bit, but not to get too far ahead of ourselves here. Let's just lock Ioana into those DraftKings lineups and not look back. Now, John, three title fights aside, this card at the Madison Square Garden is an exceptional card, you know, for not only just the pay-per-view, but even the FS1 prelims are worth tuning into. I'm going to absolutely have those recorded as well at my place. But setting up the three title fights, there's an excellent welterweight matchup here between Stephen Thompson and Jorge Masvidal. Now, DraftKings and Vegas, I think DraftKings has Thompson is more of a favorite than Vegas does. DraftKings says 8,600, Masvidal 7,600, Thompson minus 165, Masvidal plus 145. How do you see this one playing out, John?
Well, you know, this is an excellent fight, and this is two guys who make their living as strikers. Jorge Masvidal fought at lightweight, you know, had mixed results, you know, a lot of strong performances, but, you know, some weak ones, you know, some that weren't as strong. Fought Gilbert Melendez for the lightweight strike force title back in the day, you know, been a pro for a long time, fought the top guys in the game for a long time. Moved up to welterweight not all that long ago. Is 3-3 since moving back to welterweight. All three losses were via split decision, and off the top of my head, there's at least a couple in there that, you know, he could have won. Stephen Thompson is coming off his back-to-back title fights against Tyron Woodley. The first one was a majority draw, also at Madison Square Garden, you know, just about a year ago. That was a heck of a fight that went back and forth. You know, both guys got in plenty of offense. The second fight, which is a majority decision win for Woodley, not as much action, to put it mildly, which was really shocking considering, you know, the first fight. It looked like both guys were thinking out there, hesitant. It was just awkward.
UFC had everyone so excited for a rematch, and it definitely let down.
It did, and it wasn't good. I expect this to be far more action-packed, and I've said this on here before, I'll say it again. If this is a kickboxing match, which I expect it will be, there's no fighter in the division I would pick over Thompson. Masvidal would be smart to try and change up the game plan. You know, whether that's go for takedowns, you know, he's averaged just under two per fight. So, you know, he can do that. You know, he can wrestle, he can grapple. He doesn't get hit a ton on the feet considering, you know, the power that he has. But going into a kickboxing match with Stephen Thompson is a recipe for disaster. Woodley did it for a little while, paid for it, and then kind of flipped the script, closed the distance, didn't let Wonderboy throw all his kicks that he's known for. So, you know, this is a really good fight. But if it's a kickboxing match, which is the strength of Masvidal and what I imagine it will turn into, there's no fighter in the division. I'm picking over Thompson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm definitely going Thompson as well. I think the odds and the salaries have this reflected pretty well here. Not to count out Masvidal, we'll do a couple of either ors later on the show that feature him, you know, when you need to pick a fighter for 76 or 7,700. But I mean, you know, just to play devil's advocate, I think, me and everyone else, actually, I can't remember your pick for this, but against Donald Cerrone, I was definitely picking Cerrone, and Masvidal landed that round two knockout was only 7,300 and got 119 DraftKings points for that. And now he's 7,600, which is still very reasonable. He was a pretty decent favorite against Damian Maia, but got submitted. I don't count that loss against him too much because just about anyone can get submitted by Damian Maia on a given evening, except you know, for last weekend. That was rough. But so I don't want to count out Masvidal completely, but Stephen Thompson is definitely would be my pick in this fight as well, John, here. One more middleweight fight on this card, on the pay-per-view card, that we'll talk about in depth before hitting some value plays here. That's Johnny Hendricks against Paulo Borrachina. Hendricks is 7,300, his opponent just 8,900, and Hendricks is a plus 175 dog. Borrachina is a minus 200 favorite here. Borrachina's been on an outstanding run of late. He's been winning a bunch of fights in impressive fashion here and gets a high DraftKings salary because of it. Just a few hundred dollars less than Yan Jacek here, to put that in perspective here. Are you giving Hendricks any chance to win this one? I mean, this is kind of the end of the road for Hendricks. Missed weight so many times, you know, fighting in a class that he's probably too small for in middleweight. But on the bright side, Hendricks did pick up everything, move his life to Jackson Wink in Albuquerque to train with one of the best in Greg Jackson. So essentially, with the moves that he's made, are you giving him a chance at all?
Not really, no. And that's kind of scary for me, considering not all that long ago, you know, how highly regarded Hendricks was. And this, to me, is always one of the most fascinating things of the sport. Hendricks is one. You know, Anthony Pettis recently is another, though. I guess those are the two names that immediately come to mind. Guys who essentially should be more or less in the prime of their fighting careers, and all of a sudden it just falls off a cliff. And, you know, I really wish I knew, had a good explanation as to why Hendricks has struggled so much recently. You know, he's been in a lot of wars. You know, the Robbie Lawler fight, you know, you mentioned the GSP fight earlier, in which both guys took a ton of damage. But, you know, there's no, you know, obvious reason for Hendricks to struggle like he had. You know, there's no reason for Johnny Hendricks to A, miss weight by 3 pounds, and then the next night get knocked out by Tim Bosch. I mean, come on, you know. This is a guy who was viewed as one of the better pound-for-pound fighters in the world not long ago. Now, all of a sudden, he's 2-5 in his last 7 fights, and I find it hard to believe that his job's not on the line. You know, cutting, you know, former champions who were champs not all that long ago, you know, isn't, you know, always a good business decision. But Hendricks, I don't want to say he looks finished to me, but he's essentially unusable based on the combination of what we've seen from him lately and what we've seen from Borrachina, which is, you know, just a stone cold killer. You know, 26 years old, won't be 27 until April, 10-0, you know, in his career, all 9 wins via knockout, 9 of the 10 wins via knockout. He's 2-0 in the UFC, destroyed both his opponents. Again, not guys with the pedigree of Hendricks, so it's obviously the biggest fight of his career. The pay-per-view main card, Madison Square Garden. But, you know, this is like a risk-reward thing for me. There's no reason, based on what we've seen lately, to think Hendricks is turning this around. You know, maybe, like you said, maybe the move with Greg Jackson and Mike Wilkins Johnson in New Mexico and Albuquerque, you know, will make a difference. But Hendricks has come up with boneheaded game plans. He fought Stephen Thompson. He stood there. He stayed, you know, back and forth to Thompson. Thompson knocked him out.
Yeah.
You know, when the whole world thought he was going to try and wrestle and he didn't. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's just stupidity. You know, that's not, you know, talent level or anything like that. That's just poor game planning and getting in there and not doing what you're supposed to do. So, you know, maybe he can turn it around, but, you know, it's at the point where I'm not optimistic, and, you know, I'll believe it when I see it.
One aspect in his favor, though, is, you know, you mentioned the boneheaded game plans, and I'm not going to disagree with you there. But I don't think that that's going to happen under the tutelage of Greg Jackson. I think they're going to have a decent game plan figured out at least. Does that mean it will be enough to win? Probably not here. I don't think that that's the case, but he'll at least have a game plan that might be able to give him a chance coming in. Otherwise, John, I've got one other theory I want to bounce off you here. You know, with all the main event cancellations and trouble the UFC has had with big pay-per-views so far this year, is it possible in any way that if Bisping's knee injury were to flare up, they'd bump Hendricks and still keep GSP on the card? Get that rematch?
I mean, they could. I
just a wild theory. I like to think in sometimes crazy fantasy scenarios. Because I was wondering, like, some of the fights on the FS1 prelim are much better than this Hendricks fight. And, oh, by the way, he's listed as Paulo Costa on DraftKings. A lot easier to say here. But, you know, so I think there are fights on the prelims that are better, but they're keeping him on that card just in case. Maybe a wild theory.
I just don't know if they would waste St. Pierre's return there. Mm-hmm. You know, and if he's fighting Bisping, you know, you have the title to push behind it. At least, you know, even if Bisping's not, you know, the most, you know, worthy champion, you know, most high-profile champion, fighting Hendricks is kind of, you give Hendricks a main event spot of something he doesn't deserve, and then you run the risk of him landing one huge shot, and then the return of GSP is blown. But then you look at it from the other, you know, the other point of view, and are you trying to save the pay-per-view and save buys and keep GSP on the card? So, you know, it could go both ways. But
I just remember Dana White didn't think that GSP actually won that controversial decision over Hendricks, thought maybe Hendricks had it, and this could give him a chance to cement it once and for all, but with no title on the line. So that
Hendricks is not the fighter he was then. It doesn't even look remotely like the same guy. So, yeah. I mean, it's possible, you know. There's all the cancellations nowadays, who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just throwing that out there. But here, I'm knocking on wood here. Hopefully you can hear that through the microphone. I want to see these main events and all these champion fights play out here. Things are looking good so far. John, let's shift the discussion to DraftKings in specific here. We want to talk about value plays, either guys that we see and have discussed on the main card or other upsets that you might like on the card, guys that you can use to fill in your lineup when you're using favorites here. You know, you can't pick all favorites, of course, when you have six fighters to fill in. Any names jump out to you as guys that, you know, have a good chance of pulling the upset or could return value at a lower salary?
Well, two big ones that stand out, and they stand out to the point where at least the first one is the Alexei Oleinik Curtis Blaydes, you know, fight. You look at the Vegas odds, Oleinik is +315, Blaydes is -380, which is, you know, a heavy Vegas odds. And then you look at the salary, somehow Oleinik, who's +315, is at 8,200, and Blaydes, who's at -380, is only at 8,000, which is, you know, kind of seems like a screw-up. And we were talking about this off-air before, you know, I guess they're worried about, you know, Oleinik's submission history and, you know, all the fights he's been in and how talented he is in that area. But if you haven't seen Curtis Blaydes fight, it's a treat. He's a monster, you know, big, huge guys, you know, weighs in at the heavyweight limit at 265, you know, right there every time. Hits like a Mack truck, so, you know, he's got
to
be careful.
Tough to carry that weight, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Got to be careful about keeping his, you know, limbs away from Oleinik for a long period of time, but...
Yeah, getting into Olenek's guard will be very dangerous. I believe in his career, Oleinik has something of the lines of 45 submissions in sanctioned professional fights. Obviously not all with the UFC, or he'd be...
But, I mean, the gist of it is that a guy who's a -380 Vegas favorite shouldn't be an underdog in the DraftKings salary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who knows? Maybe this is a situation where the money started pouring in towards Blaydes, and of course we all know that can change the odds. But just to talk about Blaydes' fantasy history now, some people, you know, that I was talking to on Twitter today thought that after his Curtis Blaydes didn't necessarily look great against Daniel Emelianchuk in his last fight, he got the win. It was a decision. Only ended up with 66 DraftKings points, and his salary was 9,500 for that. In his previous fights before that, he was 8,900 and scored 126 points, and 8,300 and scored 130 points. So he has absolute, both of those were second round KO, TKO victories with a lot of significant strikes taken up. In the most recent one, he had 8 takedowns in the fight. So I don't know if he's going to want to be aggressive and go for the takedown against a guy like Oleinik, but I feel like Blaydes is so much of a lock, or so much of a quote-unquote chalk play at $8,000 to have you come out ahead with extra salary for other fighters. I think he's got to go in DraftKings lineups.
He's definitely a good play. And, you know, Oleinik is one of those guys who I call him a mistake fighter in the sense that he's going to beat you, you know, if you're foolish and you leave an arm exposed, you leave a leg exposed. But If you fight it, you know, a smart game plan, and you know that going in, and you adhere to what you're trying to do, especially a guy with Blaydes' size and his talent, he stands a good chance of winning. Mm-hmm.
Blaydes also 14 years younger. If you're buying into the youth argument, Oleinik born in 77, Blaydes in 91. Jeez, Blaydes is I'm older than Blaydes is, but
Linick has 52 professional wins, not fights, wins.
Yes.
He has nearly 63 professional fights, 52-10-1, which is absolutely, that's insane.
Yeah, and they do have a mutual opponent in Emelianchuk. Olenek lost to him, and Blades won. I don't know if you take that into account at all, but yeah, that's definitely something to watch out for. We both like Blades a lot. It's going to be a fun fight to watch, worth tuning in on the early prelims for. The other potential upset, John, that stood out to me, it's in the FS1 prelims finale. That's James the Texecutioner Vic. He's going up against Joe Duffy, and I do like Joe Duffy as a prospect, but I've seen too many times where some of these prospects are a little bit overrated, and Duffy's got some awesome boxing skills, some of the best like pure boxing in the lightweight division perhaps, but James Vic has been dismantling people of late, and Joe Duffy's 8,500, whereas Vic here checks in at 7,700, scored 110 DraftKings points in his last fight. Of course, Vic got beat by Benil Dariush, but outside of that, he hasn't had a loss since before 2013, also an up-and-comer. What do you think of Vic's chances against Duffy?
I think they're pretty good. I picked them. James Vic is, I have a few guys who I've been on for a while. Two of them are fighting on this card. Vic is one. Stephen Thompson was another who I've been, bandwagoning for a while, and the third is Kamaru Usman, who was just destroying dudes in the welterweight division. But Vic's advantage in this fight is his size. He's a 5-inch height advantage. He has a 3-inch reach advantage.
He is an incredible cut for him.
Yeah, it is. And I've never seen him not handle it well. Not many guys who are 6'3", can make the cut to 155 pounds like it's nothing, and he does.
And I haven't weighed 155 pounds since like the fifth grade.
Yeah, he excels at using his limbs to hit his long limbs to his advantage. And you're right, he's facing an opponent in Joe Duffy who's really good. And this is actually, without a doubt, one of the more underrated cards on the fight. But at 7,700. James Vic is, a darn good fighter and a darn good play, and I picked him to win outright.
Mm-hmm. All right. I got a couple other either-or fighters for you, fighters at similar salaries. Since we're both picking Vic, I was going to go with Vic or Masvidal because they're both priced very equivalently, but I think the clear-cut answer in that decision is Vic. What about another one? Ovince St. Preux at 9,000 against Corey Anderson, or Ian Cucilaba at 9,100 here, going up against a name that I'm probably not going to try to pronounce here. Do you like Cucilaba? Both those guys are real big favorites. Cucilaba a little bit bigger of a favorite. Who's a safer bet to win?
Well, in regards to the Corey Anderson OSP fight, that's tough for me. Because both of those guys, to me at least, are underachievers. Mm-hmm. Guys who will look like, $1 million at one point, and then out of nowhere, not such a good performance. And, I'm not talking about, OSP losing, to John Jones, whatever, that's going to happen. but, there are other fights where they don't look as strong. And I think, and I'm not the biggest Anderson guy, but I think Anderson's actually a decent value play at 7,200. Do I think he's going to win? No. But, when you look at some of the other guys, I think he's a better value play. Hmm. Cucilaba has the advantage of facing a guy with, limited experience. That's his biggest advantage. Yeah. Just going into Madison Square Garden and making, your UFC debut is, not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, so you mentioned Anderson potentially being an underachiever, but hopefully by now he's seen enough film to know that if he gets taken down to, maybe not reach back and give OSP the Von Prue choke setup, because that's what he's been excelling with lately. I think he knows enough to avoid that scenario.
Yeah, both OSP and Anderson are similar in the sense that they're both really good athletes, but they're more athletes than they are fighters, if that makes sense. Like their success is more based upon their crazy athletic ability. Obviously, OSP was a Division I college football player, so he can go. But guys who are still kind of learning the nuances of the sport, and they still make mistakes that they probably shouldn't be making, which makes for an interesting fight when you're fighting an opponent who, you know, at times will make similar mistakes. You know, so it's an interesting dynamic, but you know, I'm not the biggest Anderson guy, but that's not a very high salary for a guy who, you know, I think has a chance. You know, it doesn't mean he's going to win, but I think he has a chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, OSP's got the momentum on his side here, but I think that'll be a little bit closer than the salaries indicate. John, one more either or for you. I know you picked Stephen Thompson to win his fight. He's 8,600. Mickey Gall is 8,400 for a matchup here against Randy Brown. You know, if you're struggling with that dilemma, which one of those two do you use in your lineups? Who's safer bet to win?
That one, I use Thompson, if only because of the track record. Mm-hmm. You know, you know what you're going to get from Stephen Thompson, and you especially know what you're going to get from him in what I expect to be a kickboxing match. Now, Mickey Gall's looked real good in his young career, but you still have a kid who only has 4 professional fights, who's fighting a good, underrated, or prominent Randy Brown. So if there was those two, I'd pick Thompson.
Yeah, I mean, to Gall's credit, his last 3 fights have seen first or second round submissions. He's excellent at jiu-jitsu, of course, and has achieved over 100 points in each of those fights, over 100 DraftKings points. But, you know, when you look at Randy Brown and compare him to CM Punk or something like that, you know, it's pretty crazy. So I see what you mean with not enough information out there yet on Gall to use him. Last but not least, John, do you got a fight or any matchup here that jumps out particularly at you, something that you're most excited for?
I think the co-main event with the backstory is probably the most intriguing fight
Real
of the night.
Bad blood there.
Yeah, guys who don't get along. And, you know, it's weird because Garbrandt can be, you know, kind of abrasive, but that's not really TJ's personality. You know, you don't really see, you know, he's more, you don't really see him, you know, jawing with guys, you know, all that often. So, you know, Garbrandt got into it with Cruz, you know, you see that from him, but that's not really TJ. So, you know, when you see him going back and forth with the guy, you know, he obviously isn't a big fan. But as we mentioned earlier, this fight, this whole card is stacked from top to bottom. And I know we've said before, it seems some cards, when the UFC puts 2 title fights on it, they essentially punt the rest of the card. Well, this card has 3 title fights on it, and the rest of the card is stacked. So, mm-hmm. You know, I know it's MSG, and I guess the plan is going to be to do this at MSG once a year, I guess, is essentially going to more or less be the plan. They did it, mm-hmm. You know, the first one about this time last year. You know, they're doing it now. They'll probably do it once a year. They'll probably stack it up every time. They'll sell the place out. The place will be packed. So I guess that's what they're doing.
How far of a trip is MSG for you? I know you're kind of in the area. Do I got that right?
Yeah. If I get on the train, it's about 45 minutes. It's not long at all. And the whole area, you know, as far as, it took so long, you know, for New York to get in, you know, get MMA legalized when, you know, there's a lot of backstory I'm not going to get into, but, you know, there's a lot of backstory stuff and rumors you hear about, you know, why it wasn't legalized and political stuff and all that nonsense. But the fact that it was now finally legalized, you know, and not just in the city, you know, Manhattan and the city where the garden is, but out by me on Long Island, you know, they got a really, you saw, you know, when Chris Weidman beat Kelvin Gastelum here a couple months ago, how into it the crowd was then. You know, they're going upstate, Albany, you know, all these places. They're going all over New York to try and spread it. And obviously MSG is always going to be the main, you know, main hub because, you know, the tradition the arena has, you know, the Knicks and the Rangers and the concerts and all that stuff. But MMA, it's a big thing in New York, and it took a long time to get legalized. And even here from a local perspective, you know, Long Island is, you know, not a big place. And there's something like, I think they're at like 8 or 9 guys or 10 guys now on the UFC roster from Long Island, which, you know, is compared to, you know, the rest of the country and the rest of the world, you know, is not a big population. But
of course, Chris Weidman being one of the more notable ones.
Chris Weidman, John Volante, I went to high school with Ally Quinta. John Volante actually grew up around the corner from me. Ryan LaFleur, you know, Brian Kavanaugh.
I didn't know that about you and Ray Janelle. That's too bad. I saw that his next fight got canceled recently, so that's a tough break for him, but I hope to see him back.
A couple years younger, but same high school. But, yeah, it's big in the whole state, and it's a great card Saturday. You know, a huge crowd, big gate, pay-per-view. I don't think it will disappoint.
Yes, neither do I. So definitely something that we want to tune in for. Tune in early. Make sure to get those DraftKings lineups in as well. Well, John, thank you so much for joining me. And to our listeners, thanks again for listening to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. Again, John Littering. Follow him on Twitter at JonLitterine, or follow at RotoWire MMA. Get easy access to his fight recaps right as soon as those are done. Of course, you can follow me at JakeSki52. Happy to have you pick my brain on anything fantasy MMA related. Anyway, thanks again, John. We're going to be back with you guys prior to UFC 218, which features an excellent title fight here here in the featherweight division between Max Holloway and Frankie Edgar. Enjoy the fights, folks, and we'll be back.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELD-WEN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELD-WEN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.